The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Now we'll kick things off with our business review panel, have a look at the business stories and indeed a few others that are making this morning's papers. I'm delighted to be joined by Kieran McDonough of Healy Communications and Doug Keating. He's a communications consultant. You're both very welcome on this beautiful Saturday morning.
Thanks, Bobby. Good
nice
morning,
to be
Bobby.
Up and about early. Let's start with the TV licence, Kira. Now, I don't know if I'm reading this correctly, but did Kevin Backhurst actually say that there's a loophole and that certain types of people were exempt from the TV licence? Did he actually say that?
Well, here's the thing. Apparently, yes, at the Oireachtas Communications Committee on Thursday, Bobby, Mr. Backhurst said that 10% of those who have a television now opt out because of what he described as this, quote, loophole. So we've all heard the ads saying you got to pay it. But it would appear that there is some kind of confusion over what the situation is. Because
well, and Puss seem to have a different view.
They absolutely do. They say that television set, sorry, in the Department of Communications said that both the positions set out in the committee and on the TV licence website are correct. So the Unpost would appear to believe that there is no loophole, that everyone who has a TV needs a TV licence. And they're quoting the legislation in Adrian Wechler's piece here, a television set capable of exhibiting television broadcasting services by means of the publicly available internet only is exempt from the TV licence. So it's all very confusing. It would apply to a device such as a laptop computer, which is capable of exhibiting services by means of a publicly available internet only, such as watching live television broadcast over the internet on a laptop over a home internet connection. So I've nearly fell over backwards when I saw this morning. Is there actually a loophole over who has to pay a TV licence or isn't there? And POS says there isn't, that you have to have a TV licence if you have a TV. Mr. Backhurst apparently has mentioned this loophole.
I'm staggered because it's almost like a Ratner moment.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a very strange one, Bobby. And like my takeaway was that is that if you have a sort of smart TV and if you're getting RTE through services offered by the likes of Air or Vodafone or Sky, technically, if that TV is one of the newer ones that's not capable of operating through a terrestrial signal, only getting the material via broadband, then Mr. Backhurst and also the official from the Department of Communications, Adam Larrigy, both have said that on their understanding, you would be exempt. And this does seem to be a loophole. And the bigger context, I suppose, some of the figures quoted in Adrian Weckler's piece, that now 21% of homes say they don't have a TV. That was 13% 5 years ago. And license fee revenue, obviously, down 19% in that period. So RTE is, you know, widely reported to be under financial pressure. I think articles like this that make people think that, you know, that they can get around it, you know, the license fee almost starts to feel like it's voluntary.
Well, when we look at something like this, we can see license fee income only going one way.
Well, absolutely. Once you start talking about loopholes, people who may already have opted out have made their decision. Other people are going to say, well, if there's a loophole, then maybe I want to be part of that loophole. But it does say, according to Unpost's website,
TV sales to rocket today.
Well, Unpost says the issue of monitors and web TV boxes is a settled one. So they think that you need one. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see what happens.
Now, some interesting breaking news on the front page of the Irish Times. Walk the Great Wall with Leo Varadkar for a mere €1,286, Doug.
Yeah, it's an interesting one from the Irish Times' China correspondent, Dennis Staunton, who has managed to find out that our former Taoiseach is doing this event, I think, in a couple of weeks. It's organised by an organisation called the Enterprise Leadership Alliance Club, which seems to specialise in bringing in bigwigs and ex-politicians and then offering an audience to paying visitors. What I find most interesting about this story is the sort of slight disconnect between how Mr. Varadkar might position it and obviously how the company organising the event might like to position it, because they obviously are talking it up and over egging the the networks and access and everything that people who pay to do this will get out of being involved. They also, I found this funny, described that the fee is generally runs into tens of thousands of dollars. Leo's knocked that one on the head by, in his quote to the Irish Times, confirming that he will receive an honorarium of 17,500 euros, not to be sniffed at. But I doubt he appreciated the people saying that it could be a lot more than that. They're also saying that you will gain priority access to premium projects in the EU and the likes of biopharma and technology. So there's always this sort of grey area where, you know, people want to promote that you're going to get access and special treatment. And of course, the propriety of Leo Varadkar, I'm sure he will just be giving an interesting talk, shaking hands and signing a Great Wall Guardian certificate, which each paying visitor will get. So, Leo, that's, sorry, Bobby, something you don't have on your wall. Would you pay, would you pay 1,200 euro for the privilege?
Well, I see I qualify because they're only allowing business founders, board chairmen, women presidents and principal shareholders or owners need apply.
So it's only big cheeses like you, Bobby, Kira and I wouldn't have a chance.
Not a chance. Well, I thought it was the former Taoiseach's foray into maybe reality TV, maybe a walk with Leo with a TV camera, a crew in pursuit. But no, it's a very interesting piece altogether.
To matters more serious, Kira, Ovenish control, not an option. And we also have a piece of analysis by Declan Power telling us that Ovenish Illumina has become a blot on the national character and really cannot be ignored. This seems to be coming to a head now in terms of this pending report. And, you know, there seems to be a lot of general unease over this.
There absolutely is, Bobby. Of course, the Department of Enterprise is investigating whether the plant, Ovenish Illumina, is contributing to the Russian war effort in Ukraine following those reports by the Irish Times and the Organised Crime and Corruption Reporting Project. So, yes, this piece is based around comments from the Enterprise Minister yesterday. I think he told reporters that taking Ovenish Illumina's Limerick operation under state control is not an option. So he's ruling out that way of resolving the issue. He says that the constitutional threshold for doing so is not high enough. And of course, comments that would really have worried people in the region as well, that he couldn't guarantee any of the people working there their jobs. But he did later, in fairness, concede that he couldn't guarantee the job of any company in the private sector, the jobs of people in the company in the private sector. It's hugely worrying. This report is going to the European Commission in the next couple of weeks. Other investigations have found that no raw evidence that Illumina is ending up in the Russian military complex. But it's such a nightmare. It's a very tricky situation for the government to handle. Incredibly worrying times for the people in the region as well. I think where did I see 875 jobs in the local region, and of course the associated jobs in the wider region as well that are supported by the business there. It's incredibly worrying. But then Declan Power, as you said, has this analysis piece in the Irish Independent. It's a 6-point plan on what he thinks the government should do. He mentions an interesting one about what the Australians did. Apparently they have a similar plan to the Ovenish situation, and he says that in the early days of the war, Australia found a new owner in the US for the plant, which is really interesting. It didn't lose jobs. In fact, it recruited new employees. Okay. So he says, start looking for a new owner.
And Doug, Power's analysis is interesting for a number of reasons. He opens the piece by saying it's now looking likely that the government loathe to unilaterally take action against a major regional employer will be finally forced to take action either alone or as part of the EU effort. So something is coming to a head here.
It does feel like it. And look, I think Declan Power clearly leans towards the view that, that something is going wrong here in the sale of the material to Russia and the potential military use. He says, yes, we're doing all this research and investigation, but if it walks like a duck, it quacks like a duck. I don't think he feels like he needs much more analysis to know.
Well, to quote him, I think he says, figures vary and sources dispute, but what can't be disputed is that the vast majority of aluminium produced in Arnish is going to Russia.
Mm. And the only thing I would say is, at the moment, you know, it's the European Parliament that has voted to, you know, for sanctions on Russia. And that, I mean, that's a very different beast from the European Commission making that decision. So obviously, the concern and around the plant closing, I suppose, is premised on the EU introducing sanctions, which we will see. And as Keir identified, Declan Power comes up with various solutions. Finding a new owner was one. He also does suggest we should be lobbying the government should be lobbying the EU to start thinking about some kind of support or package to help workers who may be affected. And he also does advocate potentially for nationalisation or state ownership, which is exactly what Minister Burke has ruled out pretty definitively in the other story.
Yeah, interesting. As I say, we'll watch it because it's a story that's probably going to come to head over the next number of weeks. A business story for you, Kira. Air owner Neil deal for 4.4 billion Vodafone stake won't need CCPC regulatory approval. Very interesting to see Xavier Niel's acquisition stake in Vodafone Group. He is the primary shareholder in Air, one of the main competitors. So it looks like he now has a feat in both camps.
Yeah, it's an incredible story, incredible stakeholder as well. I mean, Donal Donovan has the story in the Indo's business pages. Xavier Niel's acquisition of the stake in Vodafone. He's now going to be the outright owner of Ireland's biggest telecoms infrastructure. But it, apparently, according to Donal O'Donovan, it won't need to go through the CCPC. CCPC hasn't commented, which is not really surprising because if nothing has been referred to him yet, but to them at all. But it would make him Vodafone's largest single shareholder. He's also already the controlling shareholder in the Irish telecoms group Air. He's acquired 64.5% of that in 2018 when buying it out of examinership. And he's also mopped up some more shares there as well. Incredible figures in this. Via the Iliad brand, which is connected to Mr. Neil, he has more than 50 million subscribers across Europe, in France, Italy and Poland. And he also has holdings that span Latin America, Monaco and Switzerland. That's an incredible reach across the mobile phone network around the world. It's just phenomenal figures.
Is this similar to Starbucks acquiring a share in Costa?
Well, I mean, in as much as potential competition authority concerns, I guess it would be. But as the article makes clear, he's only buying a 16% stake in Vodafone. And it looks like that doesn't trigger anything. But the reality is Xavier Niel has been a massive investor across European telecoms. And he is a driver of the trend we've seen in telecoms, which is consolidation. So it's hard to believe that 16% is, the beginning of his intentions. And, the Vodafone share price went up 12% yesterday in response. No surprise when a big investor comes in, but maybe there's more. And also the fact that the relatively new Vodafone CEO has had a strategy of selling assets outside Europe and focusing investment on particular markets and consolidating. So perhaps Mr. Neil likes what he sees and is investing because he wants to drive that further.
Kira, Cliff Taylor's piece, Can the State Save Dublin's O'Connell Street? And this is a very interesting piece around Metro North. It's also around the decision of Transport Infrastructure Ireland buying the former Cartel Cinema site on O'Connell Street, which is now going to be used for housing and development. And this is a site that we'd remind listeners has lay idle for, nearly 20 years?
Yeah. There's been so much talk about that site over the years, hasn't there? Obviously, as Cliff Taylor says, there was a huge amount of attention focused on the fact that this is all connected to the Metrolink railway and the money that was paid for the site at the old Carlton Cinema site. But there is a lot more to it, as he says, and he's going through it in the piece. And he says that it is going to have It's going to have infrastructure, housing, development, all that kind of thing in a small area in Dublin's north inner city. So it's apparently the development's going to be taken on by a special purpose vehicle. And he's actually pointing out that, yes, there's a lot going on here, but it's the first time in 18 years since the plan was put forward, nothing's happened in 18 years. And the plan originally was set up in the Celtic Tiger era. There was talk of a 1 billion euro proposal, including a 40 apartment block tower with a park in the sky on a sloping roof, which was amazing. Now,
that was the old Joe O'Reilly piece, I think.
It was indeed. No park in the sky at this piece. But there's a lot to be said about this site, I believe, when the Metrolink is going to be there. And also it's reflected in the Irish Times editorial piece as well. The Irish Times, you on Metrolink, the train has left the station. The moment for councils of despair has passed. It's pointing out how much has already been spent on the project, almost 725 million already committed before a single shovel enters the ground. But they're saying because of how far behind we are in development of transport links to the airport and everything that would come with that, the Irish Times editorial saying it's long past time to act. They're acknowledging that the road ahead will not be smooth. There's going to be a lot of controversy about it. But the airport connection is only one rationale for Metrolink. It's going to make the city more livable, more prosperous. It'll ease congestion, unlock housing and drawing investment. They're saying that the moment for councils of despair has passed and the train has already left the station. Yeah. Steph and Doug were talking about this before we came on air and just saying how people talk all the time about the potential for parts of O'Connell Street that could be lovely. And every time in years gone past, every time a particular retailer has come to O'Connell Street, people are saying, oh, that's not right for the area. That's not right for the area. Well, something's being done now. So, you know, let's push on.
Yeah, well, I always think that if you can get people living in a place and if they, you know, if they're serious about a serious housing project in O'Connell Street, which I'll believe when I see it.
Well, I think that's one piece that maybe Cliff was trying to make, which is, you know, this site sat in private ownership for close to 20 years. Joe O'Reilly, and then more recently owned by Hammerson, a very large UK property company. Various planning applications. It's been very difficult to develop. It's a sensitive site. You know, you have more street traders, you have connections with 1916, etc.
Yeah.
But I suppose Cliff is begging the question, you know, will the state be able more successfully to unlock this and then also develop this crucial piece of transport infrastructure? Remains to be seen. But as the editorial in the Irish Times reminds us, Metrolink, which it supports, you know, it is a 15 to 18 billion euro project. So this is a massive commitment that we have to hope we get right.
So what, nearly eight times the size of the children's hospital in terms of cost. So, yeah, it's a big one. Doug, I don't know if you're... I'm going to put this to Kira because I think she seems to like the space a bit more than you. But if you want tourists to spend locally, start by welcoming campaigner vans into car parks. And this is by, I think it's Ruth Mejber, writing in today's paper, who herself is a camper van owner. And she talks about the absolute frustration about trying to go about her business, spending money in places in the tourist economy, but really that the facilities for these camper vans leave a lot to be desired, Kira.
They do, and I'm a huge fan of Ruth's work, her photography and her columns and the other pieces that she writes about as well. She's saying that she's living in her camper van almost full time this year. She's working on a big photography project, travelling all around Ireland, and she's talking about how she has travelled all across Europe. She's stayed in multiple countries, and she compares basically the facilities in Ireland to other countries. She says that camper van tourism is being done wrong in Ireland and that it's a gold mine waiting to be tapped. And I've done a little bit of camper vanning myself. I did it in Australia, not in a backpacker. I actually took my family up the east coast of Australia a couple of years ago in a camper van. And it was a fantastic experience. I was blown away by the facilities, blown away by the cleanliness, the services, everything is wonderful. But as Ruth goes on, she goes through the various facilities in Ireland. She's not very happy about it. She's talking about how she feels that she gets the feeling that sometimes people hate camper vans in Ireland. She doesn't like the barriers to in car parks, the height restrictions in car parks, and so on and so forth. She says she loves to wild camp in Ireland. She's fully equipped with a loo, a shower, and fantastically solar panels as well. She doesn't need to bother anyone for anything. But she says when camper vanners try to engage with infrastructure in towns, like try to empty their tanks, freshen up the loo, all that kind of thing, they just face barriers all over the place. I'm just not sure if it would be top of the priority list if I was planning, if I was working in the tourism industry. Are you not very cold in an Irish camper van? Is it not lashing rain? We've all been on lashing rain holidays.
Yeah.
And what's it like to be in a camper van?
It just seems that the infrastructure to provide, you know, emptying the toilets and the loo, it seems really poor.
It means
that she's got to drive miles and miles to go, so and not even secure of actually getting access.
It is.
So that really is a problem.
I'd love to know how big the campervan community in Ireland is, because I'm really impressed if they're braving it.
Doug, I'll give you a choice for our last story. You can talk about the World Cup, or you can talk about jellyfish. Which would you like to talk to us about?
I think I'll talk about jellyfish. Although, actually, having not been that interested in the World Cup, we are getting into the business end of the tournament, so it is getting interesting. But I mean, the reason I went for jellyfish, and there's a story in the Irish Times, is that I was out in Dublin Bay the other day, and all I saw were vast swathes of jellyfish. But this article says, it has got a scientist from University College Cork, Damien Haberlin, says, you know, they're meant to be there, they're part of the ecosystem. But what he also said, which surprised me, I thought that a lot of the recent, you know, in the recent years, we see a lot more jellyfish, was to do with kind of heat and hotter weather, etc. He seems to say that's not the case, that's not an issue, that the heat... some years you get big years, some years you don't, but it's a myth that it's being driven by that. I mean, I'm not a great fan of, you know, if I jump into the water and there are a lot of jellyfish, although a lot of the ones that we have in Ireland are either, you know, don't sting or really not very threatening.
Isn't that the other point that he's making, that we throw all jellyfish debates into one bucket, but that, like, you know, lions and zebras and rhinos, they're different types of jellyfish.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you don't want to have your lion's mane or your Portuguese man of war. You want to stay clear of, but your little moon jellyfish or the little purpley ones, are, you know, seem okay.
I think part of the issue is that basically for 10 months of the year, most of the population doesn't go anywhere near the water. But then suddenly you turn out in the water. People don't know what a dangerous jellyfish is compared to a friendly jellyfish.
I don't know. It's got long tentacles and is kind of odd brown colours. I start to get pretty scared.
Kira McDonough, Doug Keating, thanks for a great review of the business and indeed some other stories. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the lovely weather that's outside.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
With Timber Living Log Cabins.